What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
Running a business shouldn't feel like surviving a software group project. One app for accounting, another for inventory, another for sales, and somehow none of them talk to each other. That's where Odoo comes in, an all-in-one business management software that brings every part of your business together, from sales and accounting to inventory and marketing, all in one powerful platform. No messy integrations, no bouncing between tabs, and best of all, no spreadsheets. Stop managing software and start managing your business with one unified system. Try for free today at odoo.com/iHeartRadio. That's odoo.com/iHeartRadio.
Just because Tim is skinny because he has the flu doesn't mean he gets to like go around just fat shaming all of the elected officials.
I'm sorry. I throw myself on the mercy of the court.
Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my best friends, Sarah Longwell and Tim Miller of The Bulwark. Tim is, as we say in the business, strapping it on to be with us today because he is sick as a dog. But look at him here grinding out content, and I love it for him.
Good news is I'm going to be skinny because it all came out last night, every end. So I'm going to be nice and snatched.
He That's just did this in the green room.
I'm going to be snatched.
I don't know what that means. Okay, so, I mean, I think I know what that means. In context, it makes no sense to me. Big show, a really fun show for you today, because we have an Ozempic guessing game. We have the human printer sending anonymous love notes to the president. We have Tulsi Gabbard, basically as the Manchurian candidate from some weird new age Hindu guru.
This is the most incredible story I've ever read.
Don't lump this man in with the Hindus. The Hindus have at least a
respect. Not real Hinduism. Oh, look, these guys are Hindu. These guys are as Hindu as some of the super rad trads are Catholic. All of that, though, as preface before, are you enjoying hearing Sarah Longwell talk about her book? Would you like to hear Not her really. Talk about her book more?
No.
You should go to thebulwark.com/events and sign up to get tickets to see her on her cross-country book tour. It's coming up sooner than you think.
Oh, God. Production made you do that? I'm sorry. I didn't know you had to plug the book tour.
Subscribe to the feed on YouTube as well while you're here. Like and subscribe, rate and review, please.
Okay.
Tim, JBL and I sold out the 92nd Street Y. Now we need a bigger venue.
Happy
Just FYI.
You. Happy for
Starting
you.
With two pieces of candy. We won't spend long on these. We're going to whip through them, but I want everybody to have a taste.
Do you know Sarah invited me to moderate her show in Seattle? I'm like, Seattle? I'm like, you want me to cross 3,000 miles across the country to go to moderate your event?
Oh, well, I'm like, sorry.
Could you not have had an event in, I don't know, New Orleans
I'll do
or
it.
Nashville?
I got family
Austin?
In Seattle.
Fine, JBL's going to come. We'll sell that out without you.
Pacific
That's fine,
Northwest.
You big baby.
It's going to be raining. I have to get a coat.
Stat News reports this week that Eli Lilly and the FDA allowed a patient to gain access, a single patient, to gain access to the drug retatruitide, which has demonstrated drastic weight loss potential through the FDA's compassionate use program, quote, this person was a 79-year-old man at the time the request was made in April, according to three sources familiar with the matter. Those sources, who requested anonymity due to fear of reprisals, said it drew the interest of top health officials, suggesting the person receiving this drug was well-connected. The White House insists it wasn't Donald Trump, which I think is a giant red flag. Just very quickly, do any of you want to throw a conspiracy theory in on this?
No.
A mysterious 79-year-old man that's well-connected needed the fat shot. needed
a brand new fat shot that nobody else can get.
Needed an experimental
special rich person fat shot.
Needed an experimental fat shot put straight into their belly. I mean, it seems like Donald Trump's one of the top candidates for that.
Right.
Are there other obese 79-year-olds that are well-connected? I'd have to go through.
First of all, yes, lots.
Can we ask AI? I need somebody with a BMI above 26 who is exactly 79 years old and who has, you know, high-level contacts.
Okay. Can I just push back on this really quickly? I understand why it's fun to think this is Trump. Yes, I do get to put. Okay. Number one. It could be any member of Congress or the Senate. Like, it's filled with 79-year-olds. There are 79-year-olds aplenty in our government, number one. Number two, Donald Trump has a lot of weird health stuff about these things. Like, he doesn't like to put things in his body, I don't think. So I'm not – that would be a point against it. Like, he doesn't like it when people touch him, all that stuff. Third point, you can already get – these drugs, like if he wanted to take these drugs, he could get high doses of these of the existing drugs, which have enormous weight loss potential. I'm not sure why he'd need the experimental one. Fourth, if he really, really wanted it, he would just go in a drug deal to RFK Jr. and get it. He wouldn't go through some proper channels. Those are all my reasons why I think this isn't fun.
Fifth, that was April. We're now in late June and he hasn't gotten any skinnier. These things do tend to work. I'm just saying. If he'd been taking it since April, he probably would have
lost
some
Jerry Nadler's 79. He could probably use the fat shot.
Maybe that's
I think Jerry Nadler's lost a ton of weight.
Good for him.
Do you think I uncovered it?
All right. Second.
Speaking of which, good luck to George Conway tonight in the New York 12 primary to replace Jerry Nadler.
Second piece of candy before we get started with the real show. Vanity Fair has an interview out today with
I'm sorry, Jim Baird is 79, and that is a big boy. Ooh. Indiana 4th. We'll keep an eye on him as well.
So Claude's just spitting out fat old Republicans for you, isn't he? Okay, that's great.
Just because Tim is skinny because he has the flu doesn't mean he gets to like go around just fat shaming all of the elected officials.
I'm sorry. I throw myself on the mercy of the court.
From Vanity Fair today. When Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan sat down with President Trump in the Oval Office earlier this year to interview him for their new book, Regime Change, Inside the Imperial Presidency of Donald Trump, he eagerly produced a two-page letter from a supporter he described as a historian. The letter's premise was extraordinary, that Trump was more powerful than some of history's most consequential figures, including Napoleon, Joseph Stalin, and Adolf Hitler. The author of the letter was not, in fact, a historian. He was a golf caddy. But Trump's evident pride in the comparison revealed something to the two New York Times reporters. Here's Jonathan Swan. Trump was visibly in a state of pleasure to be in their company. That's nugget one. Nugget two. There are details about his
company of
Hitler, Stalin, Napoleon.
Oh, okay. Not Jonathan Swan and Maggie Haberman.
Not Jonathan Swan and Maggie Haberman.
Okay. The dictator.
He was visibly excited to be in the company of another golf caddy that sucks up to him. He was getting stuck in Scavino. He needed a new caddy.
Again, from Vanity Fair, there are details about his, that's Trump's, peculiar existence in the White House residence and portraits of the figures around him, like Natalie Harp, that's the human printer, the devoted aide who writes, quote, adoring letters to Trump that she leaves in his private spaces, including one declaring, quote, you are all that matters to me. That's a thing the president of the United States has going on.
No lies detected there. About Natalie. I mean, she is Trump's human printer. So I don't know what else would matter to her. I don't know. Maybe the stock of the paper. I guess that's in service of Trump, having a nice firm stock.
But the idea of just like leaving little mash notes, like just it is very high school, right? Like with your high school crush, you slip one into his locker and then you get to class early and leave it on his desk. And then when he's not looking, you drop one into his backpack and the captain of the football team is going to notice me.
You know what? We can make fun of her. But honestly, is this so different than when people when Trump walks people around the West Wing and he walks into Marco's office and Marco says, sir, you're the greatest president. And like, how is what she does any different than what the cabinet does when they sit down for a meeting. This is what they all do.
Because those things are at least prompted. Like, this is unprompted.
I bet it's prompted. I bet this is part of her job. I bet there's a senior staff person who's like, here's how you can make the president love you. Leave him little love notes telling him how wonderful he is around his office. I used to do this to my dad to get him to quit smoking. I would invade his office. Yeah, I'd go into his office and leave him little sticky notes. It's like, don't smoke. I love you so much. Because
that's
I was 12
very sweet.
Or 10.
That's very sweet. That's like emotional manipulation from a
I know. Well, he quit.
Creator. That's emotional blackmail.
It worked.
It's not emotional blackmail. I loved him. I would like wanted him to live forever. And now he is.
Oh, boy, that's so great.
I'm just saying, these are things we do for people we love.
Well, then Natalie, the human printer, does love Donald Trump. And I guess that's really the only point. Like, that Trump has people around. He has two golf caddies now. He has the one that does the tweets and the one that compares him favorably to Hitler and Stalin. And then he has a couple of young women that leave him mash notes and they just stay around him and try to make sure his
ego gets fluffed.
Yeah. He doesn't want his mood to get too down. Or else, who knows what might happen?
We could go to war
might
with Iran
a war.
Without a plan.
Yeah.
All right. So here we go. Tucker Carlson has quit the GOP.
Amazing.
A little weird. I thought Tucker had quit the GOP over the Iraq war, but maybe not.
I would not support the Republican Party. There's no chance I would support the Republican Party. I'm not going to support the Democratic Party. I don't know what I'm going to do. But at this point, you know, how could I or any American voter support a political party that's not loyal to the United States, that puts the interests of a foreign country above those of its own citizens?
Like, Cutter, is he talking
that's
about
that? That's you know,
Sweden.
It's not possible.
He's talking about Israel.
To vote for people.
No, he's talking about
I'm not
Sweden.
Going to.
We all
and
know
I think
it.
I voted Republican my entire life. I worked at Fox News, CNN, right. MSNBC. I've been a consistent defender for 35 years of the Republican Party. I mean, very consistent defender. But there's no defending this because it's immoral and it's exactly the opposite of what a political party in a democracy is charged with doing, which is representing its own voters, its own citizens, its own nation. And they're not doing that. So, no, I'm out. And if I'm out, then I think a lot of other people are out.
Oh, no.
Do it. You can do the slow clap. I bring it to you guys. What do you make of this?
Well, it's just a highly principled human resigning from a party that's let him down, just like we did for the same reasons.
I know
reasons,
a lot of people,
right?
Some at the Bulwark, who left the Republican Party. I mean, a little earlier. It was 2016, 2015 when they did it. But, he's on the same journey as we are.
No, he's not.
Oh, no.
He's not. Okay.
Is he not on the same journey? Or is he? For discussion, I present that to you.
I was intrigued. Do you see who he's doing the interview there with?
I was going to ask. I don't know who that was.
Yeah, it's like a Canadian uncensored podcast. It's like, you know, we're exporting crankery around the world. I went to their page because I was like, maybe I should go on this show. It was my natural thought after all that. Got Tucker a lot of attention. And it's like, they have no views for anything else. Except the Tucker video has 375,000 views and everything else, nobody watches them. Why was Tucker on the show with two random Canadians?
And why did he choose that moment to leave the Republican Party?
Have you gone back through the catalog to see if they have any particular issues about cosmopolitan things or banking or the world of Hollywood or finance?
I guess
that
they have
tend to obsess
views.
On.
Okay. Yeah, my guess is that they have some strong views about the nation, about a particular nation, Israel. But anyway, I don't know. The Tucker thing is interesting. I ended up watching most of it. And they ask him about JD. And when he's talking about JD, that part is the most revealing, actually. Because he does the same thing he's done a couple times recently, where he's like, I won't reveal whether or not me and JD still talk, Cheshire Cat grin. You know, because I don't want to create any problems for him. Troublemaker grin, you know. So it's like, okay, well, you and JD are still talking, obviously. And then he's like, you know, what I would do if I was VP was I would be outside my residence every day having a press conference about how bad this war is and using that platform. But he's like, that's why I'm not in politics. I'm an outsider. I am a straight shooter. I'm somebody you can trust. JD, like, he's more of a work of the system guy. You know, he wants things to get better for people. And so I think he's in a really, really tough position. Really tough. Really tough position. You know? And I think that he wants to do the right thing. We trust him, and I'm close friends with him and his family, and I'm close friends with his wife, and she's great. And he's so I think that what's happening is like very obvious. Like, he's extremely savvy. He wants to provide outsider air cover for JD and have JD be his vassal. And if that doesn't work out, then I don't know. Maybe Tucker is the straight shooting outsider that the people will want to turn to. To me, that seems like what's happening here.
So you think he's still inside the house in terms of the Vance project, correct. The JD Vance project?
He's inside the house in terms of the Vance project. Yes. And I'm not a Republican anymore. It's more about the midterms. And it's more about, again, it's about the, you know, Sarah, like the focus groups just show this over and over again.
Yeah.
People want an outsider. People don't want a normal politician. And that's so right. By him saying he's not part of the Republican Party, it's his way of kind of rebranding or continuing along with this long-term rebranding where he's no longer the bow tie party guy, but he is, you know, somebody that speaks truth to power from his million-dollar manse in France or South Florida, or excuse me, in Maine or South Florida. I'm still on nausea drugs, but I'm getting most of the words right.
I do think we can see this goes right to my theory about America First, MAGA establishment split, right? And also, which side of the horseshoe J.D. Vance wants to run toward, right? And J.D. Vance wants the bottom of the horseshoe. J.D. Vance wants young men. He wants the anti-war crowd. He wants the anti-Israel crowd. And he wants Tucker. And I bet at some point he goes to get MTG back too. And they are building a case right now. And honestly, this is right out of Trump's playbook. Trump's playbook was you run against the party. You run against the Republican Party that's failing them. Well, Trump's the MAGA establishment now. And so is Rubio. And so is Mike Johnson. And they want to run against all those guys. And they want to say, we're the independent voices. We're the real America First. And we're more independent. We're not just party people. We're not just here for the Republican Party. We're building a new coalition. That new coalition's the bottom of the horseshoe. And you know what? There's people for that. They want Hassan Piker and they want J.D. Vance and Tucker. They want Cenk Unger or whoever that guy is, right? They want the Breaking Points crowd. Cenk. They want those guys, right? And they want them all to be. And who are the people right now out there praising J.D. Vance? It's Cenk and Tucker. Like, you can see it in real time coming together.
Can this work? It feels like it could work.
I think that there's some limitations. I think that it can work. Sure, it's like very easy to see, just to use the shorthand, manosphere types like the Rogan and Theo Von people like buying this, right? They're not particularly smart. J.D. Vance has worked them personally for a while. The story is believable. The J.D. Vance like is a true America firster, and that, you know, the Trump, whatever, got sucked into by the wily Israelis or whatever. Like, it's not true. It's not exactly true, but it's like believable.
Do the marionette hands, Tim. Yeah. Do the marionette hands.
It's not true, but it's like, you know, it's a story that they can tell themselves, right? And you know, they don't want to be the libs still. Like, deep down, like, they don't want, they their self-identity is being outside of, you know, whatever, the liberal elite, woke, soft circles that they see themselves at. And so, like, this is a way to kind of keep that train chugging going forward. Does that work, though, for, like non-whites? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, Trump has this, you know, personality, like, and does it work as well in the suburbs, right? Like Trump's like kind of was able to do it in such a way that was like tongue in cheek, you know, he's funny, he has celebrity, and like the J.D. Vance. So I don't know. I think that there's some limitations into trying to keep that coalition working, but I think it's possible.
Yeah. Wait, can I just throw this out there? Cause this is important, which is, I think it's a coalition that you can see workable, especially if you're online. Like, you can really be like, oh, I see the overlapping Venn diagrams. And I've long talked to
MAGA voters. Raw egg nationalist is going to be all over this.
Yeah, and they could, look, the overlap between Bernie voters and Trump voters was always a big segment. Not big. It was always a meaningful segment. I don't think it's most people. And it's especially not, and this is one of the funny things, JBL, I promise I'm going to write a piece for you about sort of the rise of DSA populism and why they're having such a moment. And I think a big part of it is because people are so angry about the economy, right? That is leading people to be really open to what the hell is going on with capitalism. You know, what everybody thinks all of these candidates are bought. And so they are looking for transparency. And also because people's relationship with Israel is changing and changing fast. America's relationship with Israel is changing and changing fast. Like there are new coalitions in there. But let me tell you, Black people in this conversation around the future of sort of the progressive left, they always forget that Black people, when they're like, I hate centrist moderates. I'm like, you mean, do you know who's, it's like the suburban voters and Black people and your sort of, and a lot of your Hispanic voters. And so there's actually big core, like what they really, that young progressive base is much more white, much more affluent. But it's also generational. Like part of this is, it's hard to know right now how pervasive this gets because so much of it is people under the age of like 38 too that are shifting. And like, it, so you have to be able to talk about this new generation of people that is in a completely different information environment than older people who still hew to a lot of the old heuristics around politics. So there's a lot going on to be able to put that coalition together.
And like, yeah. And some of these people are not good. I mean, like, again, this goes back to white guys. Like J.D. Vance is able, and Tucker are able to appeal to the Bernie liking white guys for sure. Beyond that, I mean, just to like just give a representative example, like the woman that is running in New York against Espilot, you know, who like said that COVID didn't really come from China because she likes China, and I forget what she said, it came from France or Sweden or whatever, and she said fuck Kamala Harris and all this stuff. Like that crowd is like, they're not buying what JD Vance and Tucker Carlson are selling. Okay. So like there's some limits to it, I think, for sure. And I don't know, and I don't know what happens with that, you know, and how the Democrats then, you know, how the Democrats kind of respond and manage their coalition matters also on this.
But there is no MAGA establishment challenger, right? I mean, this is why JD is being clever here, Sarah, because in your framing of it, like JD is the MAGA establishment. And so if he is just like making a pure play for the America First base, I mean, well, who's challenging him from the MAGA side? Marco?
Rubio. Yeah, yeah. So this was always my theory, actually, was that there was always kind of the Tucker, Marjorie Taylor Greene wing of the Republican Party that was going to be pure America First. There was going to be MAGA establishment. That's Mike Johnson. It's basically everybody who was a pre-Trump politician, but who fell in line with Trump. Trump's now MAGA establishment. J.D. Vance thought he was going to be able to hold those two coalitions together. That's what he was striving for. I do think he's falling into the crack, though, which is why he needs Tucker so much. And this war was really bad for him.
Well, this is the key, right? He has to keep Tucker on side in the same way that he needs to keep Don Jr. on
That's
side.
That's right.
This is JD's entire political future is not based on winning votes. It's based on keeping those two guys from running. It's managing up.
Yeah. And then getting Trump's endorsement, right? Trump anointing him the heir apparent.
It's great. Do you think Trump will allow that? Because that's the weird part of this, right? So, I mean, JD is kind of like running around behind Trump's back in front of him, you know, like with this sort of play. It is JD. I mean, it's kind of like two timing on a guy's wife, like while you're standing, you know, while you're flipping burgers with him and be like, yeah, you know, like Trump's well, not
Trump supports that.
Stupid.
Not
when it's his wife.
You. I don't think are Trump and him misaligned at all? I think Trump wants to get out of the war. You know what I mean? So I think that like on the Iran deal part of this, I'm not sure that they're misaligned.
Oh, I think they're perfectly aligned on Iran. But on the question of if JD has to say at some point or intimate at some point that Trump was bad, like Trump will smell that in a heartbeat.
For sure.
Right. You know, can't or do that. JD is hanging out with Tucker, or it's clear that JD and Tucker are playing footsie under the table. And while Tucker is talking about how they did this war for on behalf of some other country.
I don't know about this. This seems to me, let me just push back, because I would see the behind the scenes machinations sounding exactly like this. Trump can never fail. He can only be failed, right? This is you. I'm quoting you back to you. Mm-hmm. And so what Vance does is says, look, these hawks, you know, they gave you bad advice. They, and, you know, Israel, they gave you bad advice, man. They told you we could do this. It's okay. I'm gonna eat the shit, this shit sandwich for you, which is what he's saying, right? He's like, well, if it's good, it's me. If it's bad, it's JD. And JD's there saying, I got you, sir. Like, I can do this for you, and I can get these people back on side. And like, you just got to give me a little leash.
And JD needs Trump to turn on Israel, right? I mean, this is, you and I talked about this on Friday, Tim. This was one of our theses, that JD's life becomes a whole lot easier if Trump decides that he's out on Israel.
That seems like a pretty easy lift.
All right, guys, this show is brought to you by Decagon. If your team is dealing with more support tickets, more channels, and higher expectations from customers, you've probably thought about using AI for customer support. And you've probably seen how limited or time-consuming most options are. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Decagon. Decagon helps companies create personalized, concierge-style customer experiences with AI agents across chat, email, voice, and SMS. They're available 24/7, feel natural to talk to, and can resolve customer requests on their own, so businesses can keep up with requests without losing their personal touch. Decagon plugs directly into your existing systems, so agents can get live quickly, and because workflows can be updated using natural language, teams can make changes themselves without long engineering cycles. That means less time spent managing workflows, more time spent focused on customers and ROI in weeks. Once live, agents can pull up-to-date information, take action on requests, and understand the context behind any conversation. Also, Decagon gives your team full visibility into why agents make decisions and what's happening across every conversation, so it's easier to spot trends and improve the experience over time. Decagon helps power millions of conversations every day for brands you know and love, including Avis, Affirm, Fanatics, and Oura. Ready to transform your customer support? Go to decagon.ai/thenextlevel to get a personalized demo and see what Decagon can do for your team. Check Decagon out at decagon.ai/thenextlevel. That's decagon.ai/thenextlevel. All right. So Iran, still happening. Some very good news for both of you. We are winning so big that Donald Trump told the Iranians that they can start selling oil on the open market, including to Americans. So if you are a true American patriot who has been thirsting to buy Iranian oil at full market price for decades, Donald Trump finally won that for you. No? Is that not something that seems good? Oh, okay.
I haven't talked to you guys about this. That's a good joke. It's true. Were you guys watching the negotiations this weekend?
Yeah. A little bit.
Like, did you sit? Were you hanging on them? Okay.
Were you?
Yeah. I have been. The body language of the way these guys deal with JD. He went on Fox News and he said, "I don't really have any experience negotiating these things, so I don't know." The news coming out is somewhere between either, and this goes to your point, JVL, either we are going to get their oil and benefit, and they are going to buy all of our wheat and all of our soybeans and all of the corn that the farmers
Chinese sells anybody else.
So either we are benefiting a great deal, or the conflicting reports, like, the Iranians control the strait. They will get all the money from it. We are unfreezing billions and billions of dollars, which Trump is trying to claim they will spend back in our markets. So both sides are trying to spin it as a victory for themselves. But it has, like, the things coming out of this negotiation were either the Iranians walked out and are refusing to negotiate, or the groundwork has been laid for new nuclear oversight. It's just like, and you know what? You can't believe the Iranians and you can't believe the Americans. So who knows what's happening?
I thought that was a pretty compelling post about kind of the status of the negotiations. That I wanted to read you guys.
Sure.
From someone who's really kind of smart, like an author, been involved in Hollywood investment community, you know, just sort of kind of a Renaissance man for the modern era. And he said this: they're trying to tell us that all this stuff is true. Quote, we didn't give them money. We just unfroze their money. They promised they'd only spend it on humanitarian supplies. I'm sure they're very trustworthy. I'll ignore the $400 million in cash delivered by the latest administration. Complete idiocy.
Hmm.
Any thoughts on who that was?
Is it J.D.
Vance?
Eve Stannon?
In 2023. J.D. Vance is vice president in 2023. We can't. This is complete idiocy. Describing his own deal 2 years later as complete idiocy.
His deal is much worse.
Way worse.
So we have competing, just as we're taping, we have the administration through Barak Ravid saying that Iran has agreed to invite the International Atomic Energy Agency inspectors into the country. We have the Iranians saying, no, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
Then we have Trump jumping on. Oh, that's, you know, the don't worry. It's all fake news. Of course, we've got it. We've got it.
Thank you for sharing that. Barak Ravid has blocked me. So I do feel like I'm missing a lot of
important
breaking news. Like, yeah, it's a kind of an assault on my free speech rights, really. And if Barak is going to be the main vehicle for administration propaganda on progress in the war, it feels like it is in the public interest for Elon to unblock him. But, you know, so that I can consume his material in the public square freely. But alas, I've been blocked. So I have to trust your rendering of his reporting.
I don't know. Like, we keep saying the same thing, but I'll say it again. It seems obvious to me that this is what it's going to be. We will give them something. They will then maybe pretend to agree to continue talking to us should we give them more things. And that's just how this is going to, like, it's going to be a slow motion surrender until we can finally declare victory and just get the hell out of Dodge. And I guess the only question is whether or not Trump turns on Israel before he gets out or after.
Did you know not all batteries are the same? For example, only Duracell batteries are built different with Power Boost ingredients. And Duracell are the only batteries that make this sound every time you say Power Boost ingredients. See? Duracell batteries with Power Boost ingredients. You try.
Duracell batteries and Power Boost ingredients.
Told you. Duracell batteries are built different with Power Boost ingredients. And they're built right here in the USA with US and global parts.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
You got to hand it to the Iranians, you know, on one thing. I was thinking about this weekend. Negotiating with them is kind of like me negotiating with my daughter over her screen time, where I'm Trump and she's the Iranians. It's very humbling, you know, where it's like, hey, Papa, can I play 30 minutes of Minecraft? Okay, well, sure. What do I get out of it? And she says, I don't know. What do you want? And I'm like, I want you to be my servant for a day. And she said, okay, deal. And so then she plays Minecraft for 30 minutes. And the next day I'm like, you're supposed to be my servant. And then she's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember that. I don't remember that part of the negotiation, you know? And then just continues. It's like it's a running negotiation where I'm always conceding. And she's always taking those concessions and then pocketing them and then moving forward. And that's basically what's happening with the Iranians. Like, they each additional, oh, we get to sell our oil on the open market now. Great. And then it's like, oh, in exchange for that was the nuclear guys was going to come in. No, I don't remember that. And then, you know, then it's like, you know, a couple of days later, it's like, oh.
Sarah, my question for you is, I wrote about this today in the Dryad, that we've now freed up Iran's ability to sell oil in the open market, which is going to be a, we've also, by the way, unsanctioned a bunch of their oil tankers. So, you know, they now have a fleet of transit ships that they can use because we've lifted those sanctions too. And they are ready and rare and start your engines to sell a bunch of oil into the open market. They, back in the bad old days when they had sanctions on them, they had to sell at a discount because they were selling on the gray market. Now they get to sell at full market price. And the result of this is going to be a huge cash infusion to the Iranians and a huge supply infusion into the global oil markets, which should, in theory, help drive prices down. Are the American voters going to look at this deal and say, I can't believe we're giving all this shit to Iran? Or are they going to say, oh, gas is $3.70 again? Everything's fine.
The latter. And you know it's the latter. There's not even, it's not even close. And this is, nobody's following the back and forth machinations between these countries. And Trump will work hard to sell this deal. Now, there's a couple caveats, though. Number one, the fact that we are giving them things right out of the gate and on freezing and like bringing them in, they're getting everything they want, right, out of this. Mm-hmm. But also they have driven a wedge between the United States and Israel. Like, mm-hmm. can you imagine how excited the Iranians are to see Israel turning on Trump, knowing that Trump will then turn on Israel, which means Iran can continue to try to dangle things? Like, all joking aside, I was incredibly perplexed by the idea. Trump thinks it's a great idea to give them money and demand that then they spend that money on American products. Because in his mind, he's saying, look, I'm solving the problem I caused with tariffs to also solve the problem I caused with bombing Iran. Art of the deal, I win. But if you look at it and you're not a moron, what you're actually saying is, wait a minute, we're gonna try to bribe Iowa with Iranian money and Americans with Iranian oil. And Israel's going to keep bombing Lebanon, though, and there's going to be no end to this war, and someone else is going to have to clean up this whole interregional mess later.
I saw it flash across JVL's face. I saw it. What was the line that Sarah said that piqued your interest, JVL?
Can you imagine how happy the Iranians are? And I thought to myself, yes. Yes, I can. I can imagine it quite vividly.
Listen, Sarah said, you can see how terrible this is if you're not a moron.
Oh,
unfortunately,
that too.
You know, there are going to be a lot of morons that are processing what's happening on all this. And so,
yeah, yeah. Doesn't Trump just win?
Did you read? Hold. Well, I'm not sure.
Can I? I'm sorry. Again, people are so fucking stupid.
People are dumb.
The bottom dropped out of Joe Biden's presidency when he pulled out of Afghanistan because he was acceding to the plan that Donald Trump committed America to. That didn't impact oil prices. It didn't impact anything that anybody did in their kitchen table lies. And America's lost their ever-loving mind over it. But this, giving up control of the Strait of Hormuz and setting Iran on the path towards
people,
you know,
seem to be losing
power.
Their mind over this. Is Trump's numbers
Mark
any worse
Levin
than Biden's?
Is. Mark Levin is.
Aren't Trump's numbers and Biden's the same right now?
No, I think he's recovered a little bit.
Yeah, I mean,
no, I'm just saying, like, this is like, we're sitting here saying, of course, people won't care. But, you know, when it was Joe Biden in Afghanistan, people cared a lot.
Part of it is like Joe Biden couldn't explain why we got out of Trump. Yeah,
it's also not just Afghanistan. I'm sorry, but just it because I remember this phase of Biden extremely well. That summer was also when COVID came back. It was the reemergence of COVID. Supply chain was totally disrupted. Gas prices were very high because of the supply chain disruption. And he pulled out of Afghanistan. And it was sort of like an external calamity on top of what people were feeling here. So it wasn't just Afghanistan.
Are we only 38 minutes into the show? Was that right? I just speak this clock.
Sorry, is it not going by fast enough for you,
usually
Tim?
We've been doing it an hour and we haven't even gotten anywhere yet.
Okay. I was just wondering how much more time we got left on this, but I'm okay.
Clench
I'm
up. Ready. Clench up, Tim. He's getting away with it, is my point, Sarah, right? He's going to get away with it.
I don't think he is.
I don't think he is either.
Tell me why not.
Here's the one thing I think he could do. So my one caution is that I do think Donald Trump has decided he is going to do like the caravans version, they have a panic. They are panicking about 2026 and the elections. And for people who say, well, Donald Trump's a lame duck, so why would, and he doesn't care about the Republican Party, so why would he care about the midterms? And the answer is Donald Trump doesn't care about the Republican Party, qua Republican Party. He does care about the oversight of him. And he has the Republicans on lock for oversight of him. But if Democrats get control, somebody else is in charge. And so he is going to do whatever he can to try to keep Democrats from taking control and getting oversight. Okay. And so part of that is, how do we get gas prices down? They are very aware that, like, in terms of generic ballots, like, you get 3 extra points on generic ballots if gas is over $4.50. And if it comes down and it gets under $4, like, you start to see that number close. And so he's thinking about, how do I get oil into this market at a time when because before they were tapping into the oil reserves, mm-hmm. and they are almost depleted, which is why he is panicking, which is why he needs a deal, which is why he needs gas prices to come down. And he's going to let the Iranians put money into this. Now, on the question, though, of is it going to work? It might work in the short term of making it less of a blow. Like, he does want, if he gets gas prices down, I do think it will have a meaningful impact. On the other hand, he is working really hard to get Republicans on side on this because it is such a catastrophically, self-evidently bad deal that some people are struggling with it. Like, they are struggling to do the work of debasing themselves.
I have confidence that they're going to overcome. I have confidence in them, Sarah.
But what about the Ben Shapiros? And this piece by T. Beckett Adams, did you read this? Where he was apologizing to CNN? Well, he was saying that CNN's reporting on Iran and Trump's deal couldn't possibly be true because it would be so catastrophically bad. Like, that would be insane. And he was like, no, it's exactly what they said. And so he wrote this long apology. But I do think that Republicans are, like, freaking out at the idea that where this thing lands is just a massive, calamitous embarrassment that emboldens Iran forever, because that is what's happening. People are not freaking out enough about this, but I guarantee you Republicans behind the scenes right now are losing their minds.
I agree with the people are not freaking out enough about this part. And it is because, like, all the incentives are not to freak out. It's like the Republicans don't have any incentive to freak out. The Democrats don't want him to go back into the war. They don't want to make it seem like they're for the war, which is the stupidest thing out there right now. Me neither. They're like, if you criticize this deal, you're for never-ending Zionist war with Iran. I'd like somebody send that to me today. And I'm like, what are you talking about? No, you can. It's like, this is part of the reason why Democrats lose, was because Donald Trump was really good at one thing. He could take both sides of an issue that he didn't care about and make everybody feel happy. He had no issues with that. You know, the pro-Israel Zionist crowd thought he was going to be their greatest ally. You know, the Dearborn anti-Israel protesters maybe didn't think he was going to be their greatest ally, but he gave them enough lip service and, you know, did Arabs for Trump and stuff, and to allow them to take out their anger on Biden and Harris. He played both sides. He didn't have to have a coherent position. He didn't. And it's like, the Democrats are in the minority. They don't have to have a coherent position on this war. They can say it was a stupid fucking war to get into in the first place. He's an idiot. But the deal that he got at the end of the war is also really dumb. And he's humiliating himself, and he's embarrassing. Yes. He's weak, and he's an idiot now too. And then if the next question is, well, what would you like him to do? Like, the answer to that is,
build a time machine.
Time machine. Don't be an idiot. I wouldn't have gotten in this war in the first place. If you'd elected Kamala Harris, then we wouldn't have been in the stupidest fucking war imaginable. So, like, it's not that hard. Like, I don't need a plan. Talk to me in 2029. If he's still stuck in this quagmire, then, well, I guess we'll have to come up with the best or bad option that he left us with. Like, because Donald Trump just leaves people with shit sandwiches after shit sandwiches. And that's why he bankrupted multiple casinos. Like, it's pretty easy. But but Democrats are a little bit hesitant to do that. But, you know, I don't know. But that's where they are. I think that, to your question, JBL, about whether he's going to get out of this, he's stanched the bleeding a little bit. And he was in free fall. So if that means he's going to get away with it in that sense, I agree with that. Like, I think that you know, he was potentially staring down the barrel of, like, July, August, vacation time, people paying $5 a gallon of gas. It was going to be like a real nightmare for him. And it's still bad. It's still not good. But I do think that he has...
You know, in a weird way, because it was so bad, even the moderately better is going to feel great. Right? People will be like, 390. All right. 390. Good times are here again.
I don't think that's going to be true for people for whom like budgets are tight.
Well, maybe. I don't know. People are really stupid, Tim. Have you met them?
Well, yeah, but people can budget. They know. I mean, people that are, you know, it depends. I don't know. Like I was doing my Tom Friedman. I was chatting with my Uber driver, and guy was like, yeah, he knows the math about how much money he has to fill his car up with every week. He knows how much he's losing.
Also, gas is just one element of the economy. Like, inflation is still up. Groceries are still way up. There's not a focus group that doesn't start with people talking about how bad the economy is.
I hope, Sarah. Boy, I hope.
Did you know not all batteries are the same? For example, only Duracell batteries are built different with Power Boost ingredients. And Duracell are the only batteries that make this sound every time you say Power Boost ingredients. See? Duracell batteries with Power Boost ingredients. You try.
Duracell batteries and Power Boost ingredients.
Told you. Duracell batteries are built different with Power Boost ingredients. And they're built right here in the USA with US and global parts.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
All right, so I'll tell you what he does want to talk about. He does want to talk about the reflecting pool and America 250. Tomorrow night begins the Great American State Fair in Washington. This is the thing that all the musical acts pulled out of, and Trump then said, well, I'm just going to turn it into the greatest Trump rally ever, and I'm going to do the speech. And this is happening as we are
taking the kids down there, Sarah. It sounds like a nice family,
yeah,
friendly
event. You love
event.
State fairs, don't you? You grew up in the land of state fairs.
Yeah, firemen's carnivals, where they gave you chicken corn soup and someone sang, proud to be an American.
Sounds nice. You and the boys, you guys going to go down there?
Absolutely not. Mm. Oh, just like dead ducklings floating in the reflecting pool and vanilla ice doing a creaky 65-year-old rendition of Ice Ice Baby and nightmare.
Those ducklings were killed by Antifa, supposedly. So this is a thing. We now have had six people arrested, seven people cited for damage being done to, I'm just going to quote from Donald Trump, our country's now beautiful reflecting pool, the 350-foot gash made by a very sharp knife or razors is actually numerous slashes over a very long 350-foot length. It was purposefully and criminally done. Somebody had to work very hard, probably in the dark of night, to create such a condition. Likewise, the small area at the bottom of the pool was cut and powerfully lifted off the surface, leaving very jagged, uneven edges, blah, 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 blah. We will drain some of the water either immediately before or after the 4th of July to do the permanent repair. Donald J. Trump, I guess we care about this.
I care about it enough to write.
Okay, we don't care.
Okay. Well, we care. Here's the only reason we care. We care because Donald Trump made us care. Okay. This was not, we were not going to talk about the reflecting pool. But then Donald Trump held many meetings in the Oval Office where he had people specifically make graphics to show how the reflecting pool was bigger than buildings if you stood the reflecting pool on its edge, which why would anybody do that? He made a big deal out of its reconstruction. He spent, I don't know, many, many millions of taxpayer dollars on it, talked about it endlessly, sort of like the ballroom. And so we were made to care. And now that it is failing, right? They didn't kill whatever, the algae, because this is what he does, right? He talks about grass and he talks about how the pool doesn't look nice. And then when the nano bubbler didn't work, why do I know the name nano bubbler? I'm barely paying attention to the story. I know because it's in my feed all the time because Donald Trump talks about it all the time. And so the reflecting pool failure is a metaphor for the way that America feels right now. And Donald Trump has to blame it on somebody else, when actually he just didn't solve the problem because he outsourced it to some crony of his who did a crappy job fixing it.
Yeah, talking about this makes me want to hit the nano bubbler. I think the only thing that is relevant would be that the president, well, I mean, he's wasting our money on it, and it's going to be more and more of our money that's being wasted, and he doesn't want to help anybody make their lives better. All he wants is pretty things around him. But I do think it's just kind of a problem. Like, if there was another president besides Trump that was hallucinating a story where there was a cat burglar that snuck into the reflecting pool at night with a box cutter to sabotage his presidency, and they tell this elaborate...
What if Joe Biden did this?
Yeah, it was an elaborate Bourne Identity style story about... I guess it would be maybe
25th like Amendment,
American Treasure. Maybe what was the Nicolas Cage movie? Maybe.
Yeah, oh, I remember that. National Treasure.
National Treasure. Yeah, snuck there, black ninja outfit, wading through the algae, cutting. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous. And the president of the United States was in the Oval Office, like, telling this imaginary story as if it was a thing that really happened.
The bigger problem is using the government to prosecute a bunch of people for things that are preposterous.
Yeah, the bicyclist, the poor
bicyclist.
It's
kind of a problem, no?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you should be able to touch the water in a free country. I don't think it's a federal crime to touch dirty water.
I mean, you've been over the World War II Memorial. Like, you go there on any Saturday or Sunday, and there are, like, kids splashing around the little paddle pool, you know, in the pool and stuff, and it's like a thing that people could do. The whole idea of these spaces is that they are public venues for people to come together. But, you know, now, don't touch it. Nice, touch the water, yeah.
It's also just a lie. It's a lie like him, right? The liner's coming off because it was poorly installed, and people are able to pull it off. So this idea that somebody's in there with a knife, as opposed to the weird liner that you guys put, that somebody, like, you got scammed by this guy, it's coming up.
I'll leave this segment with another tweet from our favorite president.
There's another segment.
What people can. There's two more,
even
Tim.
We talked about Tulsi, and this all I came for the show for today.
Hold on. This is Donald Trump telling you what to expect on Wednesday. We will have the fabulous Lee Greenwood introducing me with what has turned out to be one of the greatest hits of all time, God Bless the USA, and the amazing Christopher Macchio, who will sing Nessun Dorma, Alleluia, Ave Maria, God Bless America, and others. Not since the legendary Luciano Pavarotti has there been such a voice. All right. So I had here in my notes a little teaser for the Secret Pod. And this is Sarah's dreamboat. Pete Buttigieg has said that he has been radicalized by his experience in the Biden administration and is just looking at. Here we go. It showed me the need for institutional change. I believe very strongly that there's no going back. Da, 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 da.
Before Sarah talks, I want to say something that is, please. And I mentioned this with John Gans today.
Oh, how was that? I love that guy.
I think people should check it out. You know, I was me really in rough shape, you know, trying, you know, it took me back to kind of college. It was like, I felt like it was like, but this time it wasn't a hangover, but like where I'd been throwing up all night and I had to meet with the TA to discuss Habermas, you know, so I think it was pretty good, but where was I? Yeah, we discussed with John Gans. That quote from Pete gave me a little bit of a, like my Sarah was coming out. My inner Sarah was coming out a little bit. And I'm just starting to get a little bit nervous about the whole we're not going back talk. I kind of feel like now, like the total conventional wisdom in the Democratic Party for 2029 is going to be, fuck it. Donald Trump broke everything. We should just be able to break everything and do whatever we want. And, you know, the systems are too sclerotic and we shouldn't have to follow the rules and the, you know, balance of powers and, you know, has created this government that doesn't work for people, blah, blah, blah. And that, like, the conventional wisdom, all these guys are going to be like, we just got to go in there and break things and do shit for people. And like, at some level, that resonates.
Tell me more.
Right. At some level that resonates with me. But like, on the other hand, like, Joe Biden tried to do that actually with student loans and it was a disaster. And so I do think it's important for people to reckon with that. Right. Like the conventional wisdom about the Joe Biden presidency is like that the failure was, you know, Merrick Garland was, you know, too interested in following the norms and mores of the Justice Department. Like, that's one example, you know, inflation. But like, there's not a ton of reflection about the fact that like the big program that everybody on the left pushed was student loan reform, which was A, politically moronic. because all it did was anger the people that did not get handouts. And the Democrats are already doing really well with college educated people, actually. And their problem was with non-college working class people. And for some reason, they decided to rub it in their face and say that the government was only going to give money to college educated people, even if they deserved it, even if it was fair. That's just like, that's how people processed it. Like, just like looking at this, taking aside whether you believe it's good policy as a political matter, they got nothing and they alienated people. That's
and then people who wanted it and who were expecting it were mad when they didn't get it.
Didn't get it because they broke the rules and they broke things and they went around and they didn't do it through the normal process. And then when the courts overturned it, which, by the way, has happened to Trump several times. This gets lost in the whole theory of Trump, too. This has also happened to Trump. It's not like Trump has had total carte blanche and he's done a lot of crazy shit, but the courts a lot of times have overruled what he wants to do. It's just we forget because he's already moved on to the other 10 crazy
things. True right now. The ballroom and stuff with the detentions, the ice detention, like the courts have reined
Kennedy
him
Center?
In. Not yet. Not as much as we would like them to, but still a lot.
So anyway, I just take it to like when you hear Pete Buttigieg be like, I was in there in the Biden administration. It radicalized me because we didn't get enough stuff done for people. I'm like, I don't know. I want to hear more about what he means by that exactly. But because if what he means is, you know, you can just do things, we should have broke things, we should have gotten the infrastructure money out faster, we shouldn't have given infrastructure money to the deep red areas, we should have given it to purple. I don't know. There are things you could say that I'd be like, yeah. But I'm a little bit worried about how fast we're speed running into, we're not going back. All we're going to have now is trade back and forth between socialist authoritarians and right-wing populist authoritarians, and our system of government is broken. I'm not saying that's what Pete said. I'm just like, when it's Pete starting to do this, I'm my little crystal ball is showing us a path that has me a little worried. That's all.
Well, my friends, tune in on the Secret Podcast on Friday when Sarah will be asked to choose between her love of Pete Buttigieg and radical reform.
Did you know not all batteries are the same? For example, only Duracell batteries are built different with Power Boost ingredients. And Duracell are the only batteries that make this sound every time you say Power Boost ingredients. See? Duracell batteries with Power Boost ingredients. You try.
Duracell batteries and Power Boost ingredients.
Told you. Duracell batteries are built different with Power Boost ingredients. And they're built right here in the USA with US and global parts.
Find the one and save big this summer during Haverty's July 4th sale. Right now, everything is on sale from sofas, sectionals, bedroom furniture, and more. Come find your style and celebrate at Haverty's, online or in Columbus at Polaris.
Okay, now we get to Tulsa.
Look forward to listening to that.
Washington Post has a gigantic story about Tulsi Gabbard and her relationship with this guy who is kind of a cult leader, maybe. His name is Chris Butler. He is leader of a breakaway Hare Krishna
Guru
sect
Chris.
In Hawaii. And it's a cult. Her parents were members of the cult, still are members of the cult. And what happened is the reporter got hold of several thousands of pages of messages sent from somebody within the cult to Tulsi Gabbard over the course of many years, in which they micromanaged almost everything about her political career, including what she should tweet, who she should tweet at, what legislation she should introduce, how she should vote, how she should use her eyes when on television. That's like a big thing. Like this, whoever the person is like, tell her to stop doing the eye shit. And the whole thing is nuts because whoever this person is, and maybe it isn't the leader of the cult, is obsessed with never using a computer himself. And so communicates everything through intermediaries who take down notes on his instructions and then send his or her instructions, because it could be anybody, and then sends them to through this secret email server to Tulsi. And the thing is nuts. And weirdly for me, it hit as perfectly believable and as like finally like, oh, okay, well now I understand Tulsi. Like, you know, like sometimes you read a story like this and you're like, whoa, mind blown. And instead I was like, oh, okay, now I get it. It all makes sense now.
I think there's a few things. One is the fact that Tulsi Gabbard is such an odd person and has gone through so many iterations of herself. It does leave you asking, right? She is begging the question of, why is Tulsi Gabbard like this? How did this happen? How did she become this person? And so you're right that then when somebody offers this as an explanation, she is so bizarre that this makes perfect sense related to her. Or at least it's like, okay, that would track with what I have seen from this person. Here's what's amazing about this story. And I just want to make a pitch for people to go read every word of the story. Because I sat down with it and like I had to make a meal out of it because it's long.
Like 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's going to take a while to get through. I promise you it is worth it because I think this is sort of the tip of the iceberg. My hope is that what it does is it creates more people coming forward. But this reporter, it's incredibly intrepid reporting. But basically, he gets a hold of one source who worked on her campaigns and then knew all of these players going back because it is internally, she is surrounded by people with connections that go back to this guy who ran this cult, this like Hare Krishna weird cult who doesn't put anything in writing, but who many other people sent messages. And this is the parts that will blow your mind. And they're sort of understated in this conventionally journalistic way where it's like they told her to introduce legislation and she would verbatim talk about it the way that she was instructed to by these people. Okay. And this is throughout her congressional career. It was like he had 34 instances of her, can't remember if it was introducing something, but then he looked back and it was like 26 of them were found in the memos where she was directed to do it and where she was chastised when she would do it in insufficient ways. And also that this guru was somebody who was her parents were in this cult. So she was raised in this cult, right? Her parents worked for him.
It's a little different than like Kelly from 90210 joining.
That's right. It's not like she like ran off, got involved, said, wow, this is insane and got out. This is somebody who was raised in this, whose father also ran for office and held office.
They both held minor offices in Hawaii.
But this was a person who was trying to gain a foothold in politics. And so like all the being nice to, Bashad, whatever.
Bashar al-Assad.
Bashar al-Assad, thank you. All of this stuff was like instructed by this person who then also kind of liked Donald Trump. Basically was like,
he was early on Trump.
Told her yes. to run for president. And so, listen, if you read the story, because here's the thing that's not really stated in it. The story builds an incredible case for some figure, guru, and the network of people, like sock puppets that they built up to comment on things, to booster her. Like, it's all coordinated. Like, in a world of conspiracies that mostly don't make sense, this one is incredibly, because he's got all the documents, all the memos from people. Like, he really does have the receipts. Here's what he doesn't have and what goes unsaid in the piece. Has this person been with her on this journey as the head coordinator of all Americans' national intelligence institutions? Like, I can't believe that this hasn't triggered this story broke a couple days ago. I saw it online and I was like, man, that looks really long. I'm going to have to sit down and read it. And then I sat down and read it and I was like, why isn't everybody talking about this all the time and only this? It is absolutely insane. And there should
grounds
be
grounds for impeachment of the president for putting a person like this as DNI.
The entire, like, I know that Trump's DOJ isn't going to do this, but somebody needs to figure out who now has all of this information. I can't believe it.
Guru Chris, I think.
Tim, would you like some things? Would you like me to give you some nuggets?
Sure.
I'll just read from the piece. The main speaker in a 2014 memo pressed for her, Tulsi, to propose legislation penalizing countries with citizens who had fought for the Islamic State and to issue a statement about it. Get it started in the morning, the person said. You need to be the leader in this regard. Don't dick around. I found that Gabbard released a statement the following day. A week after that, she introduced a bill in the House. This is the level of stuff. Yeah. A January 2015 memo documented
really
an unnamed
like
advisor.
Chris. He seems proposal. Very mean.
He's very mean.
He's very unkind in the statements, yes.
January 2015 memo documented an unnamed advisor's proposal to attack John F. Kerry, then Secretary of State, for saying violent activity by the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda was rooted not in Islam, but in alienation, poverty, thrill-seeking, and other factors. If that were true, the advisor said sarcastically, the way to deal with terrorists would be to, quote, give them a trophy, a big hug, increase their self-esteem, give them a good-paying job. In a Fox News interview later that day, Gabbard repeated the Kerry quote and gave a similar mocking punchline. Quote, if that's really the cause, then the solution would be to give them a trophy, give them a hug, give them a good paying job, she said. It's like this over and over. But my favorite part is there's a lot of detail about there's a coordinated sock puppet campaign of internet accounts, which swarms comment sections in newspapers whenever Tulsi is mentioned and social media accounts. And
I feel like I need one of these.
Lots of these, there's very deep coordination. And my favorite part of the entire piece is that there is a moment in which people are accusing Tulsi Gabbard of being in the tank for Bashar al-Assad. Her sock puppets rush to defend her. In the course of defending her, say things like, Bashar al-Assad is a monster. She has nothing to do with him. And Tulsi then reaches out through these chains and says to them, hey, cool it down on your criticisms of Assad. There's no need to call him a brutal dictator, she says. So even privately, she is telling the people who coordinate her defense when they're defending her from being in the tank for Assad, hey, why are you being like that, Dan? He's okay.
Can I read one of these, one of my parts? I got this wrong before. It wasn't legislation. It was in TV appearances. So he says, with my Post colleague, Aaron Schaefer, I compared Gabbard's remarks in 32 TV interviews between 2014 and 2016 with the talking points memos intended for them. Meaning these people were issuing her talking point memos. On 24 occasions, Gabbard used language in the memos almost verbatim. In 8 other instances, Gabbard used different words, but promoted some of the same ideas. Verbatim.
I'm looking forward to his testimony on the Hill, Guru Chris. I hope he wears the lei. I want to hear him shout at people. I want to learn a little bit more about this character.
Can they force him to?
I mean, he could be subpoenaed.
I mean, this is a real question. He's in Hawaii. The House does not have
that's
the
in America.
Ability. Right, but the House doesn't have. Who is the House going to send to arrest him and forcibly bring him to? Well, like people can refuse subpoenas all the time.
This is just
right?
a Bannon situation. They could subpoena him to testify, and if they don't testify, then he would go to jail.
Boy, howdy! I can't wait for that. I hope it happens.
Me too. I want to learn more about the person who is really in charge of our national intelligence for the last 2 years, Guru Chris from Hawaii.
And guys, when people were asking about it, when people were raising this issue, the reporter was raising this issue, all the pushback was, this is anti-Hinduism. Like they all said it's a attack on her religion.
We ought to ask J.D. Vance, who knows a lot about that, since he is close to the Hindu faith, and see if
was anyone checked on Meghan McCain?
No, she's out there saying this is anti-Hindu, kind of like going after David Koresh as anti-Christian or whatever. No, he seems like a good White Lotus character.
What about the Republicans who voted? Did any Republican senators vote to confirm this woman? I forget.
All of them.
Oh. How about McConnell?
Susan
how about
Collins?
Any Democrats?
Yeah.
Did John Fetterman vote to confirm Tulsi?
It's kind of hard to remember all the confirmations.
Maybe somebody can effort that. Maybe somebody can effort that for me.
Fetterman did not vote for Tulsi.
Okay. Well, they're good on him. I'm sorry.
Neither did McConnell.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go.
Collins did.
Yeah, Collins
seems like a problem.
Did.
Yeah.
This is what I mean. I don't understand why our Democrats. This is insane. This is one of the craziest things I've ever read.
Can I just say, I'm sorry. This is a trivial aspect of this. But if I told you there's this cult in Hawaii with all sorts of weird stuff, and they are super into environmentalism, would you also then expect they're kind of sort of into right-wing nationalism stuff too, which this cult clearly was from the very beginning? This is, again,
now we're in 2016. Like, they're also right-wing
social. Also anti-gay, yeah. As the general election race got underway, this is 2016 transcript show, an unnamed advisor spoke admiringly about Trump's campaign messaging. In one, the unnamed speaker said Trump had staked out the kind of maverick position that Gabbard might have taken. Quote, "This is right up your alley," the speaker said about some of Trump's remarks on Islamic extremists in America. Quote, "Too bad you're not running. It's all falling into place, but for the wrong guy. Now Trump is going to be the one, and he's a total idiot." Memos sent before Trump entered politics suggested an affinity for some of the ideas he would later adopt. In two of them, an unnamed advisor said the government needed to think, quote, "America first." Fascinating.
Well, good political instinct. Anyway, for us to wind this down, how are we feeling right now about okay. the podcast?
Okay.
It wasn't very long. It's been a great... I didn't realize we were going to read all of it live together in the final segment. It is alarming.
I thought we should have led with it. I thought it should have been our first topic.
It's alarming. And I'm Guru Chris, concerning. I'd like to learn more about his influence on our national intelligence.
Looking forward for the hearings. Hey, everyone. See you with the hearings. Guys, good show. Long show. Thank you to Tim Miller for gutting it out, for strapping it on, for being here with us, even though he was sick. Everybody else, we will see you later. Sarah and I will be here on Friday, and some of us will be here, I think, to cover your favorite president's great speech at the Great American State Fair tomorrow night on Wednesday night. It's going to be great. Lee Greenwood, special appearance. Also, the Ave Maria by the greatest opera singer since Pavarotti. Hit like, hit subscribe, follow the channel. Good luck, America.
Identity theft can cost more than you think. Drained investment accounts, stolen tax returns, lost wages, expenses for lawyers. It's a lot. That's why LifeLock is backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, which covers up to $1 million each for stolen funds, fees for experts and lawyers, and out-of-pocket expenses. Don't face the burden of identity theft alone. Protect your future and finances with LifeLock. Join now and save up to 30% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
In the next Rare Well Done, the Thrive team helps two people with CIDP tackle the tricky issue of friendship.
Hello.
They say the quiet part out loud.
In the event my CIDP worsens, my friends might decide it's too much.
Get nudged outside their comfort zone.
I don't know if I want to.
To forge stronger connections.
The best thing that's ever happened to me, our friendship.
To Rory.
Watch Rory and Michelle take on the friendship factor on the next episode of Rare Well Done.
Big transfer news today.
Who's moving?
Me. To the couch. With Domino's best deal ever since they just added stuffed crust.
Any pizza, any toppings, now with stuffed crust for $9.99.
It's a long-term contract with no release clause.
Only $9.99? Yeah, that sounds like the move. I'm heading straight to
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6/15 through 7/26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings, 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.